This program is sponsored by Blazing Grace Ministries.
This radio program is PG-13. Parents strongly caution some material may be inappropriate for children under the age of 13. Send me free. Jesus' mission was to comfort those who mourn, bind up the brokenhearted, proclaim liberty to captives, and open prison doors for those who are bound. For those who want more than status quo Christianity has to offer, Blazing Grace Radio begins now. And here is your host, Mike Janung.
Hey, Mike Janung here. Welcome back to Blazing Grace Radio. Thank you for joining us. And I hope you're walking with God, hearing from Him, and fighting the good fight in this time that is so dark, increasingly dark. And today I have with me Tim Peterson. He is a pastor and a counselor. He is the leader of our men's ministry. He leads our 8-week men's course. He leads support and prayer groups. He does counseling, including 2-day intensives. He has also been a missionary to Uganda, where he had a one-on-one encounter with a black mamba. And Sandy England has been with us for more than 10 years. She leads our wives ministry, does counseling with wives, plays a critical role in prayer, which is the engine of Blazing Grace and should be the engine of every church. Tim and Sandy, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
So, Tim, I'm going to put this first one up to you. When Ozzy Osbourne died several weeks ago, I was surprised to see Christians grieving the loss of his music. I saw one woman a bit ago post a picture of her singing one of his songs, and I saw another one, a believer, posting a picture of what looked like him and with the blue sky around him, with a kind of insinuation that maybe he wasn't in a bad place. And I know from personal experience, when I was a teenager, when he came out with an album that I bought in the 80s, it had a song called Mr. Crowley, which was about Aleister Crowley, who was a well-known Satanist of the early 1900s. And I'm scratching my head thinking, why are believers celebrating a guy who called himself the Prince of Darkness and promoted the occult and Satanism? Tim, what is your call on this?
I think it's misguided, it seems. I think we have dabbled in the world and been taught to dabble in the world by other people who have preceded us in church situations, Christian organizations, and the compromise with the world is therefore just natural for Christians, rather than being called out of the world system and really being set apart or being holy as God is holy. That's what He told us to be, set apart as believers. And many people feel like that syncretism or having both sides equally, no problem. I can live like this. I can be a Christian. And I understand from my own life I lived a dual life for a good majority of my early life, trying to live both sides, wanting to have one foot in the world and one foot in following the cross. And it ripped me apart.
Mm. And on another side, doesn't listening to music with a demonic influence open some dangerous doors at some point?
Actually, I listen to the music that is in about every store and restaurant that I go into these days. And unfortunately, that music and those lyrics are still in my head. And I start singing some of it and going, oh, wow. I don't want to be saying that. that's not where I want to be. And I believe God's gotten a hold of me in that dual life and said, do you want to follow me completely? I think the music combined with the lyrics can really mess us up and we don't even know it. And that was the height of my sexual deviance in my early years. I think I heard the music and, oh, that's what you do. So,
Sandy, what is your take on all this?
I agree. It's misguided. I think many people want to be, they twist some of the being loving as accepting what the world does and that kind of stuff. And I actually think that is probably the most unloving thing we can do, is to tell them everything you're doing and listening to and everything's okay. And I think when we start speaking truth, we may alienate a bunch of people, and that just tells us that they don't want to hear the truth. I think we're called to choose. Are you going to be of the world or are you going to be of Christ? And you can't do both. So when we see people dabbling with music or honoring people that were definitely in that dark environment, they have to choose. Are you going to be okay with being in the world or are you going to reject the world? Mm. I think it's a dangerous road to try to do both.
Well, and being involved with spiritual warfare, it kind of goes with the turf, with what we do here, reaching out to people on the front lines, people who are in bondage. And I know, Sandy, you've tasted some of that spiritual warfare, the attacks, and a ringing bell comes to my mind. I mean, what would you say to, I don't know, 20-year-old who you saw was playing with that stuff?
Well, same thing I say to my children in their 20s and 30s. It's like, do you know where that's going? Do you believe in what they're saying? Oh, Mom, it's not that big a deal. I said, that right there is the first dangerous lie you're going to believe. Mm. And we talk about it, and it's like, if it's not that big of a deal, then why is it in the Bible and against what God's telling us to be? The first little thing is, oh, it's not that big a deal, or, oh, we've got to love everybody. And it's like, not if they're going down that path. We need to love them and speak truth to them and tell them they're headed down a dangerous path, not love them to death. So that's what I say to my boys. Men. They're men now.
And I bring all these things up because I had a woman on the show about, I don't know, a year or two ago, Sarah, I forget her last name, Sarah Ann Sumpelek. She had been involved in witchcraft and was starting to become suicidal, and then Jesus intervened, and then, she flipped, and now she speaks to youth groups, to the occult, and she shared how she will speak to a Christian youth group, and then she is stunned when a lot of youth run up to her and tell her that they were messing with the stuff that had to do with the occult, whether it's Ouija boards or whatever, and didn't realize how dangerous that it was. And I don't think we hear this topic enough or at all from the pulpits, and people need to be warned about that. So that's why I'm bringing this up. And you're right, we need to warn people about these things. So let's switch gears a little bit. Sandy, what is the top one or two things you see wives struggling with in their journey to recover, to heal from a marriage that has been racked with pornography or sexual sin?
Ooh. I think the biggest thing that many women, it's devastation. Everything they felt safe, their home, their husband, their life, they all of a sudden have a disclosure and everything they believed is a lie. they feel it's a lie, and they are just devastated. They don't feel safe. They don't trust their own thoughts. They don't trust their house. They don't want to be in wherever the husband's been doing porn or, you know, whatever he's doing. They just question everything about themselves, their life, everything that they believe. And that's the hardest thing, I think, for wives, is sorting through all that and sorting that not all of it was a lie. And if they say everything that has happened the last 20 years, 25 years, whatever it is, it has been a lie, I said, you've just thrown out God's blessings. So we need to sort through all that. What was real? What was of God? And what do we do with it? And a lot of them want to set boundaries to protect themselves. So we kind of have to back off on that, because I said, do you really want those kind of boundaries? Do you really want to be their mom or their warden? And they don't. So then we just walk through that. Those two things, I think, take a lot of the conversations with the wives. Is one, everything that's happened, they can trust it, the blessings that the Lord gave them, and they need to see those and praise God and thank Him for those. And then, what does God say we need to set for boundaries for our husbands and our marriage? It's pretty much in the book, the Bible. Those are the two things we spend a lot of time on.
Anger can be very dangerous if we let it poison the heart. The heart can go hard. What do you do when a wife comes and her heart is just rock hard and cold?
Well, we just start, I ask her why she feels this way, what she's doing, and I pray for them a lot because they're not able to hear. They're afraid. When anger is, and bitterness is the prominent feeling that they're projecting, it's because of fear. So God gives me things to ask them and talk about, but to start actually talking about what they fear and what they're afraid of, and then they can start peeling back the pieces, and then they can have a conversation. Sometimes it takes a long time for them to be able to get past the anger and realize it's stemming from fear. So that's what we do.
So to manage expectations of the people who are listening, the thing to know is that the wife has a healing process that's going to take quite a while, right?
Oh, yes. I mean, there's many ladies that have been in the program years ago, but still are in the prayer groups and stuff like that. You know what to do, but sometimes you just need to go to a sister or a believer and say, I'm struggling with this. Will you pray for me? Or did you struggle with this? The healing process, I do believe, takes longer than 10 weeks, for sure. But at least they've got tools and they understand and they see truth on what they need to do and who they need to go to for the answers. Not listening to self, not listening to husbands, not listening to the world, but what does God say about them? And it does take time. And there's very much what I think the men go through. There's a lot of undoing of lies and re-speaking truth to them over and over. There's sometimes I'm like, and some of the ladies say that, Sandy, you always say that. And I'm like, well, because I need you to hear it. God needs you to hear it. So I'm going to have to keep saying it. So, yeah, it takes a bit. And the enemy doesn't want to let them go. I mean, he's got them in devastation. He's got them angry. He's got them feeling, at the pit. He doesn't want them to heal. So we always talk about, who are you listening to? That's the enemy. And just working through it, step by step.
And spiritual abuse is a problem with some of these women, right? Where they go to help for maybe, a pastor or a counselor, and they may hear something like, your husband's porn addiction is on you because you didn't do enough of whatever. Are these stories you hear?
Oh yes, quite often. It's like, well, the best thing you could do is show him grace and just forgive him. And, you know, and it's like, well, the best thing you can do is show them grace, but that doesn't mean you can trust them immediately. So we have to work through those things. The thing I'm hearing more from the ladies is their frustration with the church. When their husbands go to get help, they're like, especially the most recent groups, they went to the pastor, and the pastor's like, well, we'll pray for you. And that was it. And the ladies are livid because they're encouraging their husband to go get help, and the pastors don't know how to help them. And that devastates the wife, too. She's like, if they can't go to the pastor, I can't go to the pastor. Where do we go? Mm. And that's really devastating a lot of families right now. Mm. They don't know where to go.
So they feel left out.
Mm. They feel misunderstood. They feel that if it's too messy, they can't take it. They can't talk about it. Mm.
Tim, let's... Sad. Pardon?
Oh, I just said it's sad.
Yes, it is. So, Tim, let's talk about couples. Putting the two sides together. What are the top friction points or struggle points, two or three, that you see when you work with couples?
Well, something that Sandy and I have talked long and hard about is the husbands that get frustrated because their wives are rehashing everything that they've done for the last 30 years or 10 years or 3 years. They essentially just tell me, we just talked about that the night before last for 6 hours, and now we're going over the same thing again tonight for 3-4 more hours. And they get upset with their wives and say, well, we just talked about this. Why are you going over it again? And Sandy and I have talked about how the wives are having to heal, and that statement sets them back, and their healing then essentially just starts over again. Because it feels like their husbands are trying to get out of talking about it and being honest about it and really caring for their wife. They're just about trying to get out of that uncomfortable place. And so it's been hard to walk through those situations where, okay, yeah, you do need to be patient with her. I've said it many times, how long have you been in sexual sin since you got married, and, you know, whatever number of years. And I said, can you give your wife that many years to heal? And when it's at 70 years old and they've been married for 50 years, I don't have time. Well, how about in the time that you have, you care for her deeply instead of caring about protecting yourself? And often for the wives, it's I'm trying to walk through the attacks and saying, no, this is what you're looking at. This is what you believe. This is what you're struggling with. This is what you're thinking. And the husbands are at times saying, no, genuinely not. But there's no possible way of convincing their wives. And so I'm trying to help the wives to say, offer it. This is what it seems like. but then ask the question. And what I hear in response is, well, he's lied before, so why wouldn't he lie this time? And so I'm very similar to what Sandy said. I'm trying to take them back to trust God and to depend on God to reveal what he needs to reveal. That's one thing that my wife has blessed me with. She said, from now on, I'm going to God, and I'm going to ask God to either expose you or to make you not sleep until you confess whatever you need to confess. And it actually happened one night that I woke up in the middle of the night and couldn't sleep until morning, and had to confess something that I hadn't confessed. And so that's what I'm trying to do, is to try to put their trust in God primarily and let God be the guide for asking the right questions and trying to understand what's going on with their husbands.
Mm. So describe the effect or the impact that spiritual warfare has on the couple, and when the enemy is pushing the buttons of both sides, and how you give them discernment in walking through that instead of fighting against each other and turning about to fight with each other against the one enemy.
Hmm. Well, I think the thing you talk most about, Mike, is prayer. And as long as prayer is not a weapon used against the other person, to stop and say, hold on, there's something going on right now, and I think we need to pray. And not praying about what they've just been arguing with or the hot button, but praying, God, bring out truth and reveal your heart in all of this so that we can see how you love us, first of all, and then how we can fight against the enemy trying to divide us. And often, unfortunately, I think the couples just keep talking and talking and talking, and sometimes it improves, sometimes it doesn't. But when it's spiritual warfare, I believe prayer is the number one thing that needs to happen.
And how do you work with them with listening and being heard? Because that's a friction point for many couples when they want to talk over each other. How do you resolve or work that through?
Yeah, well, wait your turn. That's a good good thing to say. And usually it's correcting the other person and saying, that's not true. That's not what you said. That's not what I said. And I'm trying to help them to hear what's behind those words instead of arguing with all the details of it, to say, okay, find out what your husband is trying to say or your wife is trying to say. Don't just argue with them about the so-called facts. And then as you wait your turn and you seek their heart, then find out, okay, so what happened to them then in the whole situation? What affected them in that situation? And in doing that, right there, you're caring for them and trying to understand them. And I think you have two people that do that, or even one person that does it, and it begins to defuse the arguments and the one-up, and I've got to talk over the other person and make sure that my truth is heard and not their truth.
All right, Sandy, you're a prayer warrior. 30 seconds. We're about the end here. Anything you want to say?
What Tim was talking about is sometimes trusting the Lord. I asked them to start praying for truth and stuff like that, like his wife did, like I did with my husband, and to ask them, do they see changes in their husband? And to pray about that they are seeing changes and they're appreciative and they just continue to pray. And I've also asked the wives, when you're feeling that way, and tell them what you're feeling and ask them to pray with you, pray for you, and it just changes the whole environment when the husband will stop and say, oh, you're having a tough time, I will pray with you. Mm. And it just changes so much in the relationship.
Mm. All right, we're at the end.
Pray.
My friends, thank you for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time. Do you want to be free?
Blazing Grace is a nonprofit international ministry for the sexually broken and the spouse. Please visit us at blazinggrace.org for information on Mike Janung's books, groups, counseling, or to have Mike speak at your organization. You can email us at email@blazinggrace.org or call our office in Chandler, Arizona at 719-888-5144. Again, visit us at blazinggrace.org. Email us at email@blazinggrace.org or call the office at 719-888-5144.
This program was sponsored by Blazing Grace Ministries.